In terms of what people are wearing on their heads, I rather like these two wonderful portraits by a Flemish artist called Robert Campin, painted in 1435, of a man and a lady. They're in the National Gallery's collection. And these are actually townspeople. So these are sort of prosperous merchants. So they're not excessively wealthy, but they are quite prosperous. And it's just an indicator there on the left that all women of quality, whether they're queens or whether they're merchants' wives, they all conceal their hair, and when they're out in public, at least. And you can just about see that she's wearing, well, you can see she's wearing this, it's a wimple, effectively, and it's actually in three parts arranged around the head. And you might just make out that there are little kind of horns on the left and the right. So her hair's been plaited and wound into what are known as ram's horns, and we can see the outline of that underneath the wimple. And I have tried to look at this closely. I think that the hairline and the eyebrows have been plucked. And a lot of Northern European women wanted to avoid looking like the Spanish, who were the dominant power at the time. The Spanish tended to be darker. They tended to have more body hair. So there was an attempt to try and look differently from the Spanish as you possibly could. And her husband, we think on the right there, is wearing that fantastic headdress, very common by the early 1400s, and it's called a chaperon. And again, it's actually divided into three parts. There's kind of the main part at the top, and then there's a sort of like a scarf element on the left, which is wound around the back, and there's another separate part that trails down the back. So it's actually all, it's three separate pieces of fabric all wound into one. And then I just wanted to really, our last sort of foray into the Middle Ages here is this is wonderful tapestry. We might have looked at this before, I think, on a couple of the previous art courses. It's a fantastic tapestry, one of the oldest forms of woven textile, and of course used to decorate manor houses and castles all over Europe in the Middle Ages. And these are in the collections of the Victoria and Albert Museum. Although I have to say, if anyone's in the UK and able to travel at the moment, this is currently on display at Chatsworth House in Derbyshire, because these were originally in the collection of the Dukes of Devonshire, whose country estate is Chatsworth House, and they are there back in their original setting until I think January. Don't quote me on that, but anyway, just in case you're interested. So let's just get a close-up and look, because again, these tapestries are wonderful. They can tell you a great deal of what's going on fashion-wise. And these are, again, aristocrats, nobles, all taking part in a hunt, but they're clearly not dressed for the hunt, are they? They're wearing very expensive silks and furs. And what we notice here, again, is how high the waists are on the gowns and the collars. And actually, this is one of the very early first depictions that we have of collars, in fact. So an extra piece of fabric on the top, and those wonderful, again, those sort of heart-shaped headdresses hiding those ram's horns hair do's. And the men, again, they've got these long now sort of very droopy sleeves. And again, we've talked about the hose there previously. And what fascinates me there, and we saw it briefly with the Wilton diptych, but look at the fur on the lady on the right hand side, that fur lined gown. We've identified this type of fur. It's actually miniver, which is effectively the winter coat of the Baltic squirrel. And a lining on this scale would have required literally hundreds of skins taken from the squirrels during the winter months. And of course, remember that in the Middle Ages, there was a mini ice age as well. So the temperature was a couple of degrees colder than it is today. So when you're out hunting, even in the springtime, I imagine you needed to be insulated. Of course, you needed to be warm for practical reasons. Now, it's always so difficult to talk about ordinary people because we have far fewer images of them. This is rather nice. This is actually a laundress from 1432. And we can definitely tell she is not a noble woman because we can see her ankles. And of course, that's definitely an indication that she's a working woman. Noble women don't bear their arms and legs. And she's wearing effectively a short sleeved kirtle. And of course, obviously, she's wearing an apron to protect her from all the muck. And again, always the head covered, even though she's a working woman, her head is covered up. And of course, she's working outside quite a lot, isn't she? So she needs to protect herself from the sun. And that sort of, that tunic is made of wool. And certainly in England, I mean, sort of at this time, of course, wool is so important. You know, we've got 15 million sheep in England. We had three times as many sheep in the Middle Ages as than we had people. The reason we have so many laundresses is because, of course, raw wool is very dirty and greasy. And before we sort of weave it, we need to clean it so that we clean the grease out and we close the fibres. And it's a process called felting. What this lady certainly would have done is she'd have been soaking perhaps raw wool in stale human urine. That was what was used to clean the grease and also to close the fibres of the process. And in fact, another name we give to the process is fulling. And we get the name Fuller, of course. We get the name surname Fuller from that. And she spent probably several hours doing that, in fact. The ammonia from the urine would have removed the grease and closed up the threads. So you think about this poor woman. The great and the good would not be clothed unless this poor woman had done this job. Okay, right. Now we're going to move from the Middle Ages and we're going to move into the Tudor period. So we're looking at now a portrait of King Henry VII, the first Tudor monarch who brought an end to the Wars of the Roses in 1485. And kind of interesting that this portrait from the portrait gallery, he's kind of dressed in what I call modest luxury. He's wearing there a black doublet and he's wearing a sort of brocaded red velvet fabric on the top. And that's lined there with his squirrel fur, in fact, in this case. And look at those sleeves just kind of almost coming to the sort of midway down his top knuckle. And you can see just about, I think, that there's a slit on the right, just to the edge of the image there on the upper arm. So he can push his arms through and sort of have these hanging sleeves. If I just show you another image of Henry, again, some of you might recognise this. This is a bust of Henry VII, which we'd find in the Victorian Albert Museum. And this was a bust that was actually a preparation for his tomb figure, which we can see in Westminster Abbey. And again, you can see the similarity. He's wearing a hat, of course. Wearing a hat's very important for men as well. It's a beretta, and it's made of moulded felt. And it's also adopted by academics at Oxford and Cambridge universities, also adopted by the clergy. It's also worn by lawyers, interestingly, until we get lawyers or barristers wearing wigs in the 1660s. But that's all for next week. So this type of cap or hat was in common use. And this is a close-up of Henry. And in fact, just around his collar, he's wearing a different type of fur, and this is sable fur, and this is the richest and most sumptuous fur that you could wear. Perhaps it hid the wrinkles in his neck as well. But again, this idea, we've got this ice age, fur is terribly important. And by the way, one thing I should mention, I'm just going to read something to you just to have a little break from the slides here. Starting in the early 1300s, we get the introduction of what we call sumptuary laws. Now, sumptuary laws were effectively laws against what you could and couldn't wear. And the idea behind it was a sort of a restrictive practice, really, to stop people being better than they should be. So even if you were wealthy, you made money as a merchant, but you weren't an aristocrat, it was to stop you from looking like you were an aristocrat. So I'm just going to read to you this. This is one of the earliest examples of the sumptuary laws that were passed in the Middle Ages. No common woman should go to market or out of her house with a hood furred with anything other than lambskin or rabbit fur on pain of losing her hood to the sheriffs, with the exception of those ladies who wear furred capes, because shop girls, wet nurses and other servants and loose women bedizen themselves with hoods furred with ermine and miniver like ladies of quality. So the idea was that miniver, which we saw earlier, was only for noble women and royalty, and the ordinary townsfolk should not be wearing it. That was the idea. And by the way, interestingly, on that note, prostitutes in medieval London were generally tolerated as long as they wore yellow caps to distinguish themselves from any other type of woman. So that kind of that was how they managed to ply their trade, interestingly. So they wore yellow caps to identify themselves. And these sumptuary laws carry on right the way through, in fact, until the reign of Elizabeth I.